Blog Talk Radio.
With the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Manapro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program and author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Wednesday, November 30th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, and visit our blog. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, we invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the world. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. If you're listening live right now, you're automatically in the chat room. Just scroll down a little bit on your computer screen. You'll see the chat room's automatically opened up. If you have not already registered, you're in the chat room as a guest. Please take a moment to register. You only have to do that one time, and then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about our hobby and passion of backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, and a whole lot more. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today, and again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro. Manapro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manapro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manapro, nurturing life.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, Manapro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all, from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try Manapro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com. VermexUSA.com. To see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Grency has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Grency.com. Grency spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Grency.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Grency. Technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We have a fabulous show lined up for you today, as always, and the chat room is filling up very, very quickly. We want to say send a shout-out to all the folks in the live chat room. If you're in there as a guest, please just take one moment to register. That's all it takes, and then you can come on in and participate in the chat room and truly meet some good friends. We've got people listening truly from all over the world. We've had people from Thailand before and all over Europe and South America, and today it looks like Andreas is there from Norway. So good to see you, and we got some new listeners in the chat room as well, or new to the chat room, I guess. And so we want to say welcome to you as well. It is now time to bring on my co-host, poultry advocate and author. And over-the-road Prius driver on the five-week book tour, jet-setting from location to location with her team of bodyguards. It is the one and only, of course, Pat Forman. Hello, Pat. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, hey, Whisper. It's always an honor to join in on the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. How are you? We were all worried about you yesterday. Is everything okay?
Yeah, doing well. It just was a down day. It was I wasn't feeling real good to begin with. My Bell's palsy was acting up, and I had messing up my eyes a little bit. So just, you know, achy in the neck, and you know, just caused all kinds of issues. It would not have been a good show, and I just I needed it to veg out tomorrow or yesterday. So yeah, feeling much better today. Advil seemed to work. I hate taking anything, but yesterday deemed it. So it was it turned out being the last half of the day was not bad, and I'm back chipper and ready. In fact, I got to get out after the show, and I got to harvest some broccoli out of the garden. We've got an entire row. We have an entire row of broccoli. I got to get out there and harvest today and prepare. Yesterday, Pat, you'd be so proud. We had a great day. You know, I was feeling a little under the weather, but you know, sometimes you just have to do what you got to do. And, and time was not a wasting, but. Yesterday afternoon, started, you know, getting a little better, had a little stir crazy, had to do some things. Well, I had soaked some beans the night before. I had mixed some mixed beans, some Great Northerns, and some Pintos. Soaked them in a big pot overnight. And yesterday, maybe a little bit before the show started, I rinsed them out real good and strained them, and then put them in a big cast iron pot on the stove with two pieces of good cured ham hock. And those puppies cook real slow for about 5 hours. They were fabulous. And so I looked in the freezer the other day, and I was like, what's going on? I live on a homestead, and my freezer is about empty. Even when we lived up in the Atlanta area, we had a full freezer from things that we had prepared. So I was like, enough of this. So I put several quarts of this
wonderful, wonderful bean mixture in the stove. And then after that, I just got on a roll. I made a big old cast iron pot of chili, and I got that in the freezer. And then today is going to be broccoli. I got to get broccoli and bring it in and prepare it and cut it up and then get it in the freezer as well today. I don't want it to go bad. So I've got to do that this afternoon, go out and harvest some broccoli. But yesterday was pretty productive as far as getting a few more things in the freezer for winter. A little cold snap kind of got me in the mood. Maybe today, if I can get to town, I've got to get all the fixings for a big, big pot of vegetable soup. And then that'll go in the freezer.
Ooh. Well, that'll make you feel good, too.
Yes.
Nothing like vegetable soup to kind of get your energy boosted up and feel a hearty soup.
Absolutely. Good hearty soup. I got some potatoes and of course we'll put green beans and other types of beans and limas and it's going to be great. So I'm really looking forward to making maybe some vegetable soup this afternoon. So last night for supper, we had a big bowl of ham hock mixed beans with a big chunk of cornbread, and it was just wonderful. It was just wonderful. So a cold snap, though. Let me tell you, the other day the wind started moving in, got rain, and it got just really cold. A lot of people who listen to the show were like, cold? You don't know what cold is down there in Georgia.
Yeah. That's true.
But cold for the season. They even had, I think, some snow flurries up in Atlanta as this front came through. But tonight will be the cold night for this week, down to about 28, 29. So for us, that's chilly. So, but other than that, everything's going well. I got some great chickens in the news today. Tell us quickly about how the tour's going, and where's your next stop?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. I got to tell you, Whisper, I had one of the most, it was like a dream come true for me in a way, because of, you know, my concerns with nutrition and the food supply. So last night I was invited to talk at the French Culinary Institute in Santa Cruz, in Santa Cruz, California. So they have a beautiful facilities. There's one in New York, and there's one here on Santa Cruz. And I tell you, they were so interested in the differences about the nutrition with the heritage chickens and heirloom seeds. And we started at 6:30, and it went clear through till almost 10 o'clock. It's like they just wanted to keep starting and starting. So that's imagine, Whisper, if we could get the chefs and the cooking schools to really start teaching the difference about nutrition and preparing nutrition of the heritage and the heirloom. It could be huge. It could be such a ramification. And so anyway, that was really wonderful. I threw everything I knew about, not everything, but quite a bit about, you know, because the heirloom vegetables have a lot more nutrition. I've got about 6 studies in my file than do the modern Green Revolution ones. So there's a lot more information there. And then tomorrow I'm going up to be with the Petaluma Seed Bank in Petaluma, and there'll be a talk there. And I see in the chat room that, where was it? I'm going to be in someone's neck of the woods, and I lost it there. Berkeley. Yeah, I'll be in Berkeley then the next day. Rhode Island Ruby. Oh, gosh, I hope we get to meet you, Ruby.
Oh, my gosh.
Rhode Island Ruby.
That'll be dangerous. If you and Rhode Island Ruby can hook up, let me tell you, look out, world.
Rhode Island Ruby, that's right. Well, I'll be in Berkeley on December 1st, Thursday. That's tomorrow, isn't it? Is that right? Yeah, Petaluma tonight's the 30th. Tomorrow at Berkeley at the Ecology Center. And it starts at 7 o'clock and goes to 9 or more. And it's on San Pablo Avenue in Berkeley, California, the Ecology Center. So, gosh, this schedule, I'm about a third of the way through. So I must admit, I miss my little pooches and my cats and my chickens. But Oprah Humphrey's doing well. She was invited to come in the Culinary Institute in one of their, they've got this classroom with stoves behind it, just like Julia Child sort of used to do her show on. And the CEO had a photo op with Oprah Humphrey in the Culinary Institute, French Culinary Institute. So he said, well, they bring in live lobsters. Why can't we bring in a live chicken? So
that.
And she charmed everybody. I mean, she was a co-presenter and just did her usual little soft clucking and of course got petted by everybody. And So it was great. So that's pretty much the tour. It's just I just take one day at a time. That's all I can juggle right now, and getting myself where I'm supposed to be. Hey, Twisper, have you ever used a Garmin or a GPS?
I did once when I was on a Chicken Whisperer tour, I think about a year and a half ago. I was, I was in New York, and I just about came really close. Jen had to literally restrain me from throwing the darn thing out the window. So,
oh, my.
Oh, my goodness. It did not work well for us. And so, I just about threw the thing out the window. I have a GPS unit, and it's a handheld, and it's called a freaking map, okay? And I pull it out of the glove box, and I read it. So, it sounds like you're having a ball with yours.
Well, I am, and it's not perfect. I've got a Garmin that was lent to me by one of the hosts down there, Marge Erickson, and I got to tell you, it got me through Los Angeles, the belly of the beast down there, in a storm, rainy weather and rush hour traffic, and it didn't miss a beat. So I learned to trust it. But then I got out in the country and turned into my a friend's driveway, and it told me to go another 0.7 miles, you know, and the driveway just ended a few hundred feet. So I go, oh, dear, what's that all about? So it does have its limitations, but just getting me through Los Angeles, oh, geez, Los Angeles. But it is helpful, and if you've got an address and it's not in a rural area very far, it's gotten me around. So if I travel a lot, I think I'd get some. But you can get them on your iPhones now. It's just astonishing what the iPhones will do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey.
But you know what's not? You know what's the best part about these GPS is I'll make a wrong turn or I'll mess up, and it doesn't say dummy. It just says recalculating in a very non-judgmental voice. I thought, oh, good. if I make a whole series of messes, it still just says non-judgmentally. Recalculating. It doesn't say, I'm not going to tell you because you didn't listen to me last time. it's like you messed up and I'm never going to speak to you. It's just so non-judgmental, and I find myself wanting to have a little bit of reward. Say, hey, Garmin, I made it. And it just says, arriving. You know? But that's nice not to, because it used to be when I traveled with the either my dad or Andy, it seemed like if they got lost, it would then be an anger episode, you know. So
exactly.
I kind of got programmed, I messed up. Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is even if you arrive at the wrong destination, it still says, you're a winner. You're a winner.
No, it doesn't even say that. It just says arriving on right. You're there. That would be interesting if they did put a little program in there saying, yeah, you did it. It was easy.
Yep.
You know? But no, it's just non-judgmental. Recalculating.
Hey, Pat, do you know what tomorrow is?
Tomorrow is December 1st. Last night we got there a little early, so I put on the clucking Christmas carols,
mm-hmm.
And everyone just cracked up. It's like, where'd you get those? They are funny. They can get a little annoying kind of fast because it is a little grating, but so anyway.
Annoying? Annoying?
Annoying, yeah, they can. Oh, dear.
Bye. goodness. Did you say annoying, Pat? Oh, my goodness. Gotta love it. Hey,
It is time for
some chickens in the news. And, Pat, I've got a humdinger for today. Let me tell you, I've got a humdinger for today. So, let me get over here to where I can open it up. And let me see where it is. I think it might be in this segment. Yes, it is. Oh, me. I will be posting this on the Facebook, Chicken Whisperer Facebook page here in, after the show. And, of course, I'll be – and I'll probably do it in an untasteful manner. But every year – and this is not the first story this season, and I promise you it will not be the last. So here we go. And maybe one day people will listen to my advice. Not all of it, because some of it is wrong, but some of it, at least regarding this. Here we go. This comes to us from the Post-Independent in Glenwood Springs, which I believe is in Colorado. Here we go. Heat lamp blamed for fire in Carbondale chicken coop. Yep, let me rephrase that. Let me say that one more time for all of you out there. Heat lamp blamed for fire in Carbondale chicken coop. Now, how many times have we talked about heating your coops? In most all cases in the United States is not needed. Okay, here we go. Carbondale, Colorado. The Carbondale Fire Department said a heat lamp running overnight in a chicken coop started a fire early Tuesday, here we go, that burned the coop and burned a nearby straw bale and shed and, ready for this, Pat, and two homes. Okay.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Jeez, man, come on, folks. Firefighters were called out at 3:48 a.m. to a brush fire at 184 North 11th Street in North Carbondale. The first responding officer arrived within 8 minutes and reported a fire burning between a shed and a home. The first fire truck was on scene in 16 minutes. Sounds like another story there for the news media. 16 minutes to get a fire truck on scene. The fire damaged a chicken coop, straw bale shed, and windows of the residence, along with a fence, deck, and porch at the adjacent residence at 201 North 10th Street. No one was injured, but all the chickens in the coop were dead in the blaze, and the coop was a total loss. The fire department responded with three fire trucks, an ambulance, and 17 firefighters, because these people had a heater in the coop that probably didn't need it in the first place. The fire was reported as being out at 4:21 a.m. Carbondale Fire Deputy Chief Bill Gavette said the first arriving engine staff with both volunteer and paid members did an excellent job of containing the fire and preventing further spread. The Carbondale Police Department and the Garfield County Sheriff's Department also assisted. Heat lamp blamed for fire in chicken coop. So there we have it. I was just chomping at the bit to talk about this news here. And so just wanted to make sure everybody takes heed of that. When chickens have been around since about 8,000 BC, and we've only had electricity maybe over the last 125 years, and the chickens have been doing just fine the last 7,925 years. So with no heat lamp in their coop. So just saying, y'all who listen to the show on a regular basis know my opinion and my stance when it comes to heaters in the coop. And every year, every time I get a story like this sent to me or I see it on the newswire, I will share it with you to try to tell people and teach people that in most all cases on the planet, a heater is not needed in your chicken coop. Thank you. Now, I will not argue with people that say, but I'll sleep better at night knowing my chickens are nice and toasty. That's fine. How can you argue with something like that? But when all your chickens are dead, your coop's burnt to the ground, and your neighbor's house is burnt to the ground, then don't come running to me. So that's all I got to say about that. So,
Well, Mr. If I could just add a 2 cents in on that, I think you're right, especially when you said in most climates. And there are breeds that are winter hardy. And I've seen chickens with single combs and even rose combs with frostbite and frostbitten toes, and it's a pretty horrible thing. So if you do live in the colder climates, choose the breeds that aren't so prone to frostbite, that have the cushion comb or the pea combs, the Americanas with their little muffs. They don't have these big wattles hanging down to get frostbite. So that's a consideration, too. All chickens are not suitable for all climates. I just wanted to throw that in.
Just like people, all chickens are not created equal.
When it comes to cold feet.
When it comes to, yeah, they,
and fingers. And noses.
Yep, gotta love it. Gotta love it. So yeah, I definitely saw that this morning and said I've got to share it. I will be posting it on my Facebook page after the show with probably the same comments I just made on air. So wanted to get that to all our listeners. So
Hey, Bard Rock says in the chat room, he says the average chicken generates 60 watts of heat. So if you have 15 chickens, you've got a 900 watt heater. Talk about alternative energy, which is really, really interesting. But it's true. If they can cuddle together, and if they're out of a, you have to make sure they're out of a draft. They'll hunker down and they'll cover their little feet with their feathers and tuck their little heads under their wings, and they can be pretty cozy through a remarkably cold night. But make sure they're just out of any drafts. Yeah. But did you know roosters can't tuck their heads under their wings? Whisper.
We've heard that.
I don't know
what
it is. But sometimes they'll have to use a hen next to them to keep their little head warm. But they can't seem to turn around to tuck their own head under. Anyway. Yeah.
Very good.
In fact, that's one of my roosters, Buff Warpington, did get some frostbite because I guess he didn't use a nearby hen to tuck his little comb under to keep it warm throughout the night.
Yeah, got to watch out for that. Got to watch out for that frostbite. So,
that's
going to wrap up Chickens of the News, because then I think that should do it. But I do want to go to commercial break. It's about that time, and we come back. We've got a couple of great guests. They're going to be with us today. It's a husband and wife team, and they are members of the Georgia Predator Hunting Association, and very, very interesting. We'll post their website in the chat room here in just a few minutes, but when we return, they're going to be talking about, at least I know in Georgia, the predator problem we have, and they're going to explain to us all the rules, all the guidelines, the DNR rules and laws and the books, and why, maybe not in all places, but here, why they have a big membership, and why they do what they do, and how important it is that they do what they do, and we'll get all the facts from them when we return after this short commercial break. You're not going to want to miss this this segment, and we'll be back, folks, with the Georgia Predator Hunters Association. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after this short break. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com. Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Great show today. I think, I believe, and I'm hoping that the show just might a great turnout in the chat and many, many others out there in listener land. And then, of course, we'll get lots of folks listening to the archive. Well, we've been teeter tottering about number 11 and number 16 on iTunes top list there for BTR shows. So this show may just put us up there in the top 10. I'll have to follow that this week and see where we're at. Because we do have a great show today. In fact, Pat, you're back live. Thank you very much for joining us today on your busy book tour. And, of course, I'm going to go ahead and bring on both Amanda and her husband, Ben. And I believe it's pronounce your last name for me, Ben.
Yelverton.
Yelverton. That's what I thought it was. I just didn't want to destroy it live on the air. So give me just a second, too. I'm going to come over here to I'm going to try to post the Georgia Predator Hunting. There it is. Georgia Predator Hunting Association. I'm going to post your website in the chat room here. Give me just a second, and then we're going to start talking about so people can look at the site and see what you guys are all about, and then we'll start talking about it. So let me get back over here in the chat room. There we go. All righty. Perfect. And we've got Ben and your wife, Amanda, is in the – Amanda, right?
Yes.
Perfect, perfect. All right, tell us about – I don't know if y'all are the founders or president of the club, vice president, I'm not sure. Tell us a little bit about yourselves regarding the club, how long the club's been around, and what the main goal is of the Georgia Predator Hunting Association. And thank you very much for joining us, by the way.
Thank you for having us.
Sure.
I'm actually – they call me the field staff director. I handle the complaint department. The Predator Hunter Association, we started about 3 years ago, and it started out as a group of guys that were interested in predator hunting and realized we were educating more animals than what we were doing good. And we kind of got together and took one another's experience and then started the Predator Hunter Association to help educate people in Georgia and around the country about predator hunting and to try to help them keep from making some of the same mistakes we made and for us to also learn from them.
Very good. And so what is the I guess the main goal when y'all get together, y'all have specific hunts. I've noticed from your Facebook page, as being Facebook friends, you're not too far down the road from me. A lot of the hunts take place at night, overnight, or at least after dark. And so I'm guessing that's most of the time for, I guess, most predators, maybe that's done. But tell us some of the what predators are y'all trying to reduce when y'all go out on a hunt? What, name some of them, you know, fox, boar, pigs, coyotes. And just give us a list of what kind of predators we're talking about.
Well, the main problem you have around here as far as, I guess you'd call livestock damage, and they affect your turkey, wild turkey crops, is coyotes. They take a lot of livestock, especially calves during calving season.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's mainly what we hunt, the fox and the bobcat. They actually have a season on them, and it'll start December the 15th, I believe. I'm not 100% sure, and run through the middle of February.
So they have a designated season for, I think you said, bobcat and fox. Is there a season for the coyotes?
There is not, and a coyote can be hunted with whatever you can come up with to hunt him with. The fox and bobcat have to either be hunted with a shotgun or with rimfire only. Like I said, that is during season. And then the coyotes, like I said, it's year-round. There's no limit on the coyotes. So the hog population, of course, I'm sure you know, around where you are is really growing, and that's something else we try to do too. And what we're learning as far as the night hunting is they're more apt to come out into an open area, especially the coyotes. I don't know what you know about them, but they're a super smart animal, and they have a super nose. They can smell 5 different smells in one breath.
I guess throughout the year your night hunts are going to be for the coyote, but then we have seasons. And I guess the DNR, they set these seasons just like deer season and dove season and quail season. And I'm going to assume, I'm not a hunter, but I'm guessing those seasons are set and approved to try to limit, just like with deer, the population. Otherwise, they get out of hand, they become nuisance, they become pests. And so same thing with the what we would call predator hunting, I guess, for the bobcat and the fox getting out of hand, and I guess definitely for coyote hurting livestock, which I guess could be sheep and goats, and you said turkeys, and I guess maybe even cows, calves, things like that, to try to eliminate some of the damage to these farms. I do know, like you said, up in this area, there is a horrible wild hog problem where farmers will, you know, they'll even pay per hog, I guess, to have them, you know, eliminated off their farms, both for crops, mainly the crop damage that they will do. So even other than coyote, some of those others, this regulated, and hey, you only have a season for this, that, and the other. And I'm guessing that is also just to keep the population down and under control. Is that correct?
That's correct. A lot of the main reason they put a season on the fox and the bobcat is they consider a fur-bearing animal, so they have a trapping season for them too. And the season and the limits on those helps keep the population down, but it also helps keep from overtaking of the wildlife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. And
as far as the Predator Hunter Association, we actually have an annual hunt every year. It'll be coming up again in February. We haven't set a date yet, but we will be setting one. It'll be on our Facebook page and on the website. So we're looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess being the with bobcat and the fox, I mean, obviously I'm just going to guess that you hunt those after dark at night.
We do both. I actually do more daytime hunting. The fox are, we use mouth calls for the fox and the bobcat. You can't use electronic calls for them. But for the coyotes, you can use an electronic call. And But we use a lot of different calls as far as mouth calls for the fox and the bobcat. And the bobcat's more of a waiting game when you're after them. They're just like any other cat. They're going to take their time and come in. But old fox, he'll come on in. He's not as hesitant about coming in to the call as a fox or as a coyote or a bobcat is.
So unlike deer, which I guess you can't hunt at night, with some of these predators, predator hunting, you can hunt at night, which then means I guess you have to you use spotlight?
You do. With the coyote, there's no limit on your light that you use. With the fox and the bobcat, it has to be a 6 volt or less light. And there's a lot of people that are going to the night vision using night vision scopes and stuff like that. And we've actually just gotten into that in the last couple of weeks. And it's amazing what you can see when they can't see you.
I bet it is. Absolutely. So I'm going to, on our Facebook page, just because obviously when you have over 13,000 folks that are, that are fans on Facebook, and of course you post something, I could post something about anything and there'd be somebody that would have not necessarily opposition or their only opinion. A gentleman had put down here I'm disappointed if you're taking the position in supporting eliminating top predators. Killing them makes no ecological sense. There are many fine ecologists at the University of Georgia that can explain the problems with, again, taking out predators. But again, and of course, I told him, I said, thank you, listen to today's show, hear for yourself what this group is all about, then you can judge all you want, but thank you for your comment. And so someone had also put down, I would never kill a big cat, there just aren't enough of them around anymore. And I'm guessing that just depends on where you live, based on the population of that particular predator. I guess like with anything, they can get to become a nuisance and a pest. Almost in some places, deer have been categorized that, and they'll have special deer days in certain areas to take them out. So what I'm sure y'all work closely as a nonprofit organization that does this, following all the rules and abiding by all the laws and the Department of Natural Resources and the whole nine yards. I'm sure they understand and obviously have no problems with what you're doing. What do you say to the folks that say, oh, predators have a purpose not necessarily the I couldn't kill anything. We're not talking about those folks, but the people that say, oh, they're beautiful animals. They have a purpose. It's all about the survival of the fittest. What is the group's kind of response to that mentality?
As far as the response to that, we actually, one of our board members is actually a DNR agent. We work hand in hand with him to be sure all the rules are followed with our annual hunt. And as far as the predators having a place, they do have a place. They help keep the they help to take out the weak animals, and they also, like the coyotes, they help scavenge just like a buzzard or anything like that and eat carcasses. But they're also, as you said, can get overpopulated. I have some friends up in Jones County that have actually lost 2 dogs to coyotes. So for the people that are against killing predators when they're taking your pets, it kind of changes your mind on that.
Right. Now, is there, if let's say, and I'm just going to say, because, people, you take out an animal and, people, you're not going to, is there anything, once you say take out, we can go down the list, say fox, bobcat, coyote, and you can elaborate more if you want. Once that animal is eliminated, what can be done to benefit you, yourself, your family? Is there meat involved? Is there the skin that you can do something with? What are some of the, based on the different predators, what are some of the positive things you can do with the animal once it's eliminated?
With the toads and the fox, I haven't actually heard of anyone actually eating it. I know some people eat bobcats. There's a big right now. The coats and the fox aren't bringing very much as far as the pelt or fur or whatever you prefer to call it. But the bobcats are bringing a pretty good price during season, of course, when you can take them. But we know people that's been getting anywhere from $75 to $100 for a green bobcat. However, I mean, in green, all it's done is skin. It's not hadn't had any tan or anything done to it.
Mm-hmm.
And our main goal as far as the Predator Hunter Association is to just educate people on the predators and the good they have, good of course, and the bad. Like we talked about with them taking livestock. I know a friend of mine in Randolph County, he's lost 12 calves. This year.
12 calves. That's some big dollars when you talk
that
about
is.
That. Yeah, absolutely. So now let's talk about the dangers to the hunter. I've never gone out to hunt, say, wild hog or boar, but they got the tusks. You hear stories every now and then about a hunter getting gouged and just 500 stitches up their leg things. And so how about the different risks when y'all go out on a hunt, and what are the risks from the different animals? Say, occasionally you'll hear about a rabid fox biting a lady in the neighborhood, but in your situation, the dangers of, say, fox, bobcat, of course, the wild boar, the hogs, and coyote. What kind of risk for those different animals are susceptible to the hunter, if any?
As far as to the hunter, the bobcat, and like you said, to mention the rabid animals, they're not going to, I don't foresee one really attacking a human being, and either with the same case with a fox. They're more scared than they are a danger. The reason for the fox and the bobcat is we actually have them trying to get into our chicken pens. We actually lost a chicken to a cat. But as far as the coyotes, I've heard stories. There was a special on a couple of weeks ago, I think it was on Discovery Channel, about the coyotes, and they were mainly mentioning the cases where they were taking people's pets, especially out in California and places like that, where the people have moved into the wildlife areas. And they've actually had coyotes attack people out there, and I know one instance I saw they mentioned in New York City, the big park in New York City, was there was a girl attacked there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember, there was another instance they mentioned where a girl actually lost her life due to coyotes. And around here, people will hear coyotes, and it'll be 3 or 4, and they'll think there's 15 or 20. And I will say, I could imagine a pack of coyotes was especially somewhere they're hungry, that would attack a person if the opportunity presents itself to them. But as far as a real danger, and the hogs, the boars and stuff is what we worry about the most. I used to do a lot of hog hunting with dogs, and you had to be careful of them because when you corner an animal, he's a different animal than he is when he's just out there wandering. And that's just like the coyotes. I know people that deer hunt, and they say, well, we see them all the time. And they talk about killing the coyotes. And we tell them, that coyote is a totally different animal. He's coming into that call looking for something to eat. He's totally different than when he's just wandering through the woods. But back to the damage to, or the dangers to hunters,
Right.
The main thing we worry about is the different diseases they carry, especially the rabies.
I noticed that I believe it was Amanda had posted a picture on her Facebook page of a cat, and I forgot the caption. It was like, guess what this is or something, and not being an experienced hunter, I wasn't sure. I said, I think I said something like cougar or, there was another one I posted. I couldn't remember what I did, but that it was actually, I think, a cougar that somebody's hunt cam actually picked up down in, I believe it was South Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, and I think that was confirmed as being a cougar.
It was. That was in Lowndes County, or right on the Lowndes County, Brooks County line, and they, Georgia Outdoor News, which is a big magazine for Georgia, especially for sportsmen and fishing and hunting, they offered a $1,000 reward back earlier this year for actual proof, whether it be a picture or a video of the cougars themselves. And I don't know if they ever, I didn't see the final results to see if there was actually a proven picture, but I know the guy that picture came from, and it, you look at it, there's no doubt. But on the cougars, per se, we don't see them very much. DNR will tell you they're not in existence. But back in 2008, there was a fellow hunting in Troop County, which is over close to Columbus, or actually north of Columbus. He shot a cat, a big cat, and he didn't know the difference. If it had been a non-native species, which would be your western mountain lion, there would have not been any fines because of it not being a native species. Well, they had to do DNA tests to tell the difference. And it was a native cougar or panther or whatever you prefer to call it. So they do exist. they have a large range, and if you see one, you may not ever see him again.
But yeah, I think that was my comment. I said that's either a mountain lion or a cougar. I wasn't sure, and they said that I think Allison had Amanda had posted that it was a cougar. So a lot of people are saying they don't exist, but yet we've got a camera of that one down there, and someone else who had maybe took one out, and so that's interesting. What are there? Interesting. So, do we know of any others that have been taken out or captured or trapped?
I do not know, like I say, as far as a known event happening. I know the DNR, they were talking at one time about reintroducing the Florida strand, or Florida panther, people like to call it, back into the Okefenokee Swamp, which Lowndes County is down around Valdosta, so you're not talking about a great distance.
Mm-mm.
Considering a male will have a range of, I think it's 200 square miles. So
yeah, that's definitely a big a big range for an animal. You don't even think about that, and having
right.
Male having that big an area. So let's talk a little. So mainly, and I was talking to a Facebook message with Amanda that, you know, you talk about trapping, but some people may say, well, what about trapping? What does that end up doing? You know, you trap this animal, and then what are you going to do with it? Where are you going to take it? I mean, you're going to go and have this nuisance animal a problem somewhere else. I'll take it off my land and go release it somewhere else. Here you have a cat that you've said may have a 200-mile radius. I doubt anybody's going to capture it and take it out of that 200-mile radius and let it free. Then now 200, you know, there's how many hundreds of thousands of people are going to have a problem with this predator in that 200-mile radius. So okay, let's humanely trap them, And then now what are you going to do with it? Just like with raccoons and possums, maybe in an urban area, they'll want to trap them humanely. They'll drive, you know, there's a wooded area by where I work. I'll just let it out there. But then there's a subdivision behind that place, and then now they have the problem of the possums that you just had in your place. So I guess that's a valid point for the folks to say, what about trapping them? What in the world are you going to do with it once you have it in this have a heart trap or this cage? Now what are you going to do with it, right?
That's correct. And that causes a problem. Of course, you know, that's where a lot of the hogs come from is people, they'll trap them and then they'll transport them and put them somewhere else because they think, you know, it is, they're fun to hunt and they think, well, they're fun to hunt, I'll put them here. Well, a sow can have 3 litters in a year's time or an 18 months time. So you're talking about anywhere from, just say, 5 to 10 piglets, and then those piglets have piglets. So when you, there's actually a very large fine on transporting wild hogs alive. So there's people that have permits to take care of nuisance animals. I have a good friend that has a business, and that's what he does. Is he goes around like people have, just like say our chickens. If we were having problems with a fox or a bobcat or a raccoon or something like that, and it'd be out of season, he'll come and trap them. And I know he sells a lot of hides, a lot of pelts, because that's how he makes his living.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the problem of trapping them and then moving them to another area, that's something you run into. You also run into the problem where there may be an area where the animals have diseases. So you trap that animal, you don't know if he's got a disease or not. You move him to another area, and you just introduce the disease to that area, and then you wiped out those animals.
Well, that's a great point. That's a great point. I never thought about that. That's a great point regarding that. Man, I had one more question I was going to ask before the break, and I was thinking about the disease issue, and I just can't. Oh, jeez, right off the tip of my tongue. So, I know what I was going to say. Y'all don't only, even though it's the Georgia Predator Hunting Association, and again, nonprofit organization, y'all obviously are concentrated here, and most of the hunts are done here in Georgia. But I heard you had some members heading out of state to do a hunt, actually as we speak. Is that right?
That's correct. Jeff Nimitz, he is in Nebraska. I can't remember the name of the town now. But they're going out there for his 7th annual hunt. And this year he'll have 40 teams. He actually had to take reservations for the hunt for next year because he had so many people wanting to hunt. And two of our board members, they left today going out there to be on the field staff for him for his hunt. They'll go out with different teams just to keep everything fair and make sure nobody's doing anything illegal or breaking any kind of rules, stuff like that. You don't, you know, people will do anything to try to win something, so just to keep things fair and keep people from cheating.
You're exactly right with there. That's perfectly makes sense. So no, that's good. So they're flying out there and doing a hunt. That'll be good for your group. And do you know? I mean, you started this group? I'm going to assume that it's not the only one in the country. I guess there are other groups, clubs, nonprofits across the country that do exactly what y'all are doing as well.
That's great. There's a National Predator Hunting Association. I know there's one in Indiana, I believe, and they're all over the country. That's something we're trying to do is as far as the southeastern United States that we know of, is we're kind of starting it in this area, and we've talked with some people in Alabama, and they want to try to get one going, so we're trying to help them with that. And we're still growing ourselves. We're not a profit, and our only income is the stuff, like our T-shirts and stuff like that.
And don't y'all have a sponsor, too, or y'all have had a couple of sponsors in the past?
We have. One of them is Ambush Firearms. It's out of Black Creek, Georgia. Mm-hmm. It's actually a company called Daniel Defense, and they're a big provider of our military small arms, and they branched off a sister company called Ambush Firearms for to promote the hunting line of the AR-15 platform, and they're our main sponsor. We have several others.
Is that the hunting version of the AR-15? Is that the weapon that your daughter took her first deer this season?
It is. That is it. It's chambered in a 6.8 SPC, and she was very excited about that.
I saw the picture. I shared it with all my Facebook friends, and because that was an awesome picture, and good for her. I was very proud. So that was super. Okay, it's top of the hour. We're gonna go to a commercial break, and then when we come back, we're gonna talk to Ben's wife about how and why she enjoys predator hunting. In fact, funny story. Since we are friends on Facebook. She had a post on her Facebook one evening that said something as to the tune, the guys are out on a predator hunt. I sure wish I was out there with them. And so that was great. And so when we come back, we'll talk to Amanda about her hunting stories and why she enjoys it so much. So we'll be back right after this short break. Stay with us, folks.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites. Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com or call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's strombergschickens.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today is all about predators. We've got a couple of members, Ben and Amanda, with the Georgia Predator Hunters Hunting Association. And let me bring Pat on here. Pat, any questions for Ben before we bring his wife on? She's going to tell us why she enjoys predator hunting so much. Don't let me forget, one more question for Ben, too, in just a minute. What predators respond best, I think, to, I believe he said mouth and electronic calls. I'll go back and read that from Grover. In fact, Grover, if you will PM, private message me that question so I get it correct for Ben. Pat, any questions? Or comments?
Gosh, Whisper, thanks for asking. I don't know hardly anything about hunting, so I don't really have any questions to formulate. I mean, the whole issue of predators is a huge issue, of course, and it's so complex, and I'm glad that there are predator hunters out there for some things, and on the other hand, of course, wildlife is precious too. So I don't know, it's an interesting balance that we have to humans versus sort of predators and keeping livestock and food chain we have to all address. So no, it was really interesting. I appreciated listening to the discussion. So thank you again very much for sharing.
Yes, thank you. No problem. And yeah, I want to thanks Ben for coming on. So Ben, let me see if I get in the chat room here real quick. You're back live. Let me see if I can scroll up and see if I can still see the question. Which predators respond best to mouth calls or electronic calls, Ben? And this is Grover. He's out in Kansas. He does a lot of predator hunting. In fact, he posted in the chat room, he likes predator hunting is really his favorite because it takes a lot more patience often and whatnot. But tell us regarding that question, which predators respond best to mouth and electronic calls?
As far as which ones respond best, they'll respond to both. The coyotes, we have found they're going to come for one of three things. Food, they're hungry, territory, and curiosity. And a lot of times we find around here, it's not a hunger thing that they're coming to. It's the curiosity of the sound. And as far as mouth calls and electronic calls, I like to use an electronic calls with the coach because it allows me to place the sound out away from me, and it's used off with a remote control, so I can work with the wind, which is very critical in hunting the coyote. And they'll come to the call, and I can use the call to get them downwind a bit, but not get downwind of me so that they smell me.
Okay, perfect, perfect, perfect. Hopefully, and of course, I invite you, if you have any other questions, comments or suggestions, definitely post them in the chat room. We've got Bluegrass Mama, who we're going to talk to next, in there as well. And so if you have any questions in the chat room, please post them. Post them in all caps so we can recognize them as a question you may want to get on the air. Or if you have a question or comment you'd like to ask on the air, you can give us a call, 347-637-3237. That is nationwide, 347-637-3237. So let's go ahead, if you don't mind, Ben. We'll talk to Amanda. I know that she, from her Facebook post, I know that she really enjoys predator hunting. I know that her one post that kind of tickled me, that seemed, I know she was probably home with the kids, but she was like, all the guys are out predator hunting, and I sure as heck wish I was out there with them. And that was great, kind of tickled me. So, Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure, no problem at all. What's your favorite part? What's the sporting aspect, the excitement, the butterflies in the stomach, what's your favorite part about it?
Like Ben mentioned earlier, you know, the coyotes, they're like dogs. You know, they train dogs to sniff out drugs and bombs and other things amongst all different, you know, things that could maybe confuse them or, you know, set them on a different trail, but they still find them every time. So, I mean, they're intelligent animals, and it's like a game of cat and mouse. Can you outsmart the coyote or the bobcat, you know, or the fox and actually get them to come in where you can get a clean shot at them?
Now, I think Ben talked a little bit about this earlier in the show. I don't remember, so I'm going to ask kind of one more time for the. We'll just take let's see, bobcat, coyote, fox, and we'll do hogs. Those four are hunting. Is it like for those four predators there, and it may be different for each one? You can elaborate. Is it like sit and wait? Do you sit and wait and call and have them come to you? Is it more of a, like you said, cat and mouse, where you can actually travel through the woods and try to find them? Based on those four, we can start with, let's see, we'll do coyote, bobcat, fox, and hogs. Or is it, you know, where you set up? So tell us those four. Is it more of a sit and wait, or is some of those you can actually pursue?
Well, it's more of a sit and wait type situation. Like say coyotes, bobcats, foxes, we do what we call a setup, where we select an area where we know there's been movement, and we'll set up, we'll hide pretty much in our camouflage, usually sitting on the ground, but we have hunted out of deer stand, and we set the call and a decoy out so they have something to go to and they're not, you know, going to necessarily be looking for us. But we try to get, you know, where they're not going to smell us, because they have an extremely strong sense of smell. And we may, it's not like deer hunting, we may sit for only 15 or 20 minutes in one spot and sit and call. And if we don't see anything, we'll move to a different area. It's a lot more, I guess, action-packed than deer hunting. You don't just go and sit and wait for it to maybe come across your path. We'll go and sit out and we'll call and we'll actively look for them and try to get them to come in to where we are.
Okay. Yeah, that makes makes perfect sense. And so a little bit more active, and I guess it makes it kind of challenging as well, because they could see you, they could hear you coming. You might be able to see and hear them. You got your night vision on. So I can see how that can be kind of exciting. Are there areas, I guess, you know, you say, hey, we're going to go hunting this Saturday, and we'll head out about, you know, 10 p.m., what have you. How do you identify places to hunt? Are most of these predators anywhere out there where you can just say, hey, I'm going to go over here? Or do you get reports from different farms and property owners that, hey, I've seen several of these. Do y'all want to come into my property and hunt these? Or is it just kind of blind? Say, hey, we're going to go and see what's out there.
Well, we have done the, hey, let's go see what's out there before, but if you're really doing a planned hunt and, you know, really trying to be successful, you know, we've had farmers, different people contact us and say, you know, hey, we're having a lot of problems with these predators getting after our livestock, or they're getting close to the house. Can you come and try to do something about it? We'll go out and actually scout the area before we go to hunt it, to see, you know, we'll look for tracks, we'll look for scat, different things, signs showing that the animals are moving actively through that area. And then we try to find a place where we can sit and be concealed but still be able to see and have, you know, a pretty open area to be able to draw them out into.
Let me ask you this. I don't know if this is consistent of a predator or not, more of a nuisance. Just popped into my mind, because when we first bought our house down here 4 years ago, and now that we're down here full-time, I hear a lot of several neighbors, several folks in town, especially on the outskirts of town, complaining an awful lot about armadillo and armadillo, depending on where you're from, and the damage they cause. A neighbor put up some electric fence just to keep them out of their yard several years ago from rooting up things. And just again from my novice ignorance, would that be considered more of a nuisance or a predator? And people, I mean, is that on the list of a predator to be able to take those out as well if you see those?
Well, there's no season on armadillos. They're considered a nuisance animal, which coyotes and hogs, I know in the state of Georgia, are considered a nuisance animal. That's the reason there's no season on them. You can hunt a coyote or a hog over bait. You know, you can do pretty much whatever it takes to get rid of them, because they're considered a nuisance animal, and they've been classified that because their population is just booming. There's more than what is necessary to, I guess, necessarily have a balanced ecosystem. You know, you get too many predators, and then you get too few of the prey animals. And then when there's no prey animals, there's nothing for the predator to eat.
Cool.
But as far as armadillos, there's really no way to hunt them other than to watch for them. You can't really call them into you. You know, you can watch. If you know where they're digging up in your yard, you can sit outside and wait for them.
That's exactly right. Now, speaking of that, we do have a lot of, let's just call it what it is, a lot of gun nuts that listen to this show, some not so gun nut, and then some anti-gun nut. But nonetheless, we have a lot of nuts that listen to the show. And so for us, the gun nuts, what is the weapon of choice? Let's go down the list. The weapon of choice, say, for coyote.
Most people use a 223. We hunt them with the 6.8, 223. You can shoot them with a 22. Just it's whatever you want to. You know, if you have a favorite 9mm pistol and you want to go out and shoot a coyote with it, in the state of Georgia, you can.
Okay. And for whatever specialized round you might want, hollow point, wad cut, or whatever. Okay, so that's coyote. How about fox?
Fox, in the state of Georgia, it has to be either a shotgun or rimfire.
Oh, interesting. Okay, shotgun or rimfire for fox. Let's see, what do we have? A bobcat.
Same with the bobcat. Bobcat and fox in the state of Georgia. Now, each state's going to have different laws and regulations, but in the state of Georgia where we are, it has to be shotgun or with fire.
Again, for bobcat. And then how about the wild hog?
Wild hog is open to any caliber, just like the code, because of them being a nuisance animal and,
uh-huh.
and because of the of the problems we have with them. But with my philosophy on the hogs is overkill is still a kill.
This is true. This is true. I remember back, God, it must have been in the late 80s, 87, 88. I remember that I had some friends that went hog hunting. Or they went deer hunting, too. But it seemed like back then it was just coming around to, say, hunt with a Ruger Red Hawk 44 Magnum with a fairly long barrel with a scope on it. And so I just, ever since then, I thought, how cool, if you're into that, hunting wild hog, wild boar with a Ruger Red Hawk with maybe a 10-inch barrel with the scope on it. And have y'all experienced that before? Anybody in the group use that method?
Yes, Ben has.
What y'all laughing about?
He's pointing to himself.
Okay.
I have a 41 that I like to hunt with. It's a Red Hawk 41 Magnum, and I like hunting with it.
Yeah, that brings back some memories back when I was in college. But the Ruger Red Hawk with the scope on it and hunting hog and whatnot. So very, 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 very. USMC vet in there talks about a 22 Magnum that he's used before. So very, very, very interesting. All righty. Well, hey. Amanda and Ben, thank you very much for joining us today from the Georgia Predator Hunters Association. Why don't you go ahead and give us your website so people are interested. They can go to your website and see more about what all y'all are about and how y'all do this, I guess you want to say ethically and legally and by the rules and by the law and the reasons why you do it, to clear up any misunderstandings for a few out there. So give us your website.
Okay, it's georgiatha.org. And we are also in the process of setting up our new website, which will be georgiatha.com. And if you type in either address, it will take you to our website.
Okay.
And you can find us on Facebook, and we'll also post the link on there to our Facebook page. And if anybody's interested in T-shirts, we have really cool T-shirts to say, "Save a Turkey, Kill a Coyote" on the back. And as a matter of fact, that's our profile picture, is the back of the T-shirt.
Okay, good. Hang on just a second. I see several people in the chat room says that they got dead air. Let me just check something real, real quick here. I'm still showing that we're streaming just fine on my switchboard. So as long as I can hear you it says that we're streaming, then we're still on and recording for the podcast, which I know many of your members who may not be able to listen live now will want to listen to the show 24/7 at iTunes, podcast.com, Zoom.com. So as far as I'm concerned, we're still there and broadcasting live. Some people said that some people, okay, they refreshed and it came back. So, yes, we are still live, still recording. Must have been something regarding on the listener side at Blog Talk Radio. So they had to refresh and then it came back. May have been a glitch there. So, but I think hopefully everything was recorded. But just in case it wasn't, because we got plenty of time, give us that website one more time, because apparently, according to the comments, it we went to dead air right before you told us about that. So give us the website one more time. I apologize for that.
That's fine. It's georgiatha.org.
Perfect. Got it. So they can check you out and get up all kind of that kind of information. Well, Ben and Amanda, thank you very much for joining us today. It was a great show, educating us on true predator hunting, the excitement of and the true purpose of and the service that it is for farmers and people who make a living and put their kids through college and put food on their plate based on their, whether it be crops or their livestock in the backyard and the service y'all provide for that and making it a true sport. So we thank you for joining us, and we wish you all the best.
Thanks for having us.
We enjoyed it.
And then, hey, maybe one day we can all meet down at the Forsyth Grill in Americas. We would love to meet y'all and break bread together with y'all.
Absolutely.
All righty. Y'all have a great afternoon. Thanks for joining us. Alrighty, folks, another great show. Pat, you're back live and joining us. So we thank you for hanging in there and listening. Mm-hmm. Interesting show, wasn't it?
Yeah, very interesting. There's so many worlds out there that I don't have much information about, and so I learned quite a bit. I had no idea about hunting for predators. Yeah. Now, are you going to be a predator hunter now, Whisper? Is this inspiring you to go out and do mountain lions and bobcats and grizzly bears?
Oh, my goodness. I will have no reservations of taking out anything that messes with my family, my stuff, or my livestock on my property. Let me put it that way. As far as going out to, I hunted a little bit in college, but I did bow hunting. That's another thing I meant to ask them. Do people bow hunt, which I'm sure they do, the predators we were talking about that. I don't see why they wouldn't, or if even crossbow hunting was legal for that. But and I should have asked that. Bad host. But that would have been a great question. But yeah, anything.
Well, here's another question. Whispered this question from Walter in the chat room. He goes, "How about dumb people hunting?"
Well, I guess there's no matter what it is, depending on what you want to classify dumb people. I guess Walter. I guess dumb people can do just about anything, and often we see them in the news when they try to do that. So. But no, it just depends on what your definition of that is, Walter. So, again, I will repeat, anybody or anything with anything or anybody that tries to mess with my family, my stuff, my livestock, or my house, I have no problems taking it or them or whatever it is out if I have to. But as far as going out in the woods and all camo and whatnot and predator hunting, I don't know. There's a first time for everything. I'm sure I've been invited by many people to come hunting. I've been invited to go hog hunting, with dogs to hunt the hogs, and I know Amanda and Ben have invited me to come and join their group, and so there's a first time for everything. So we'll just have to see. Who knows what tomorrow brings? There's a first for many things out there. So, very interesting show, very good show, and so we're just going to wrap it up with that. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow is Thursday, the first Thursday of the month. In fact, tomorrow is. Yes, it is the first day, of December. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all I'm going to torment you with today, because the show's about to end. But yes, tomorrow is the first day of December, but also it means that poultry scientist Dr. Bridget McRae is going to be here tomorrow, and so it's going to be a great show. We have two great topics that we've confirmed that we'll be talking about tomorrow. I'll be posting that on Facebook a little bit later, so join us tomorrow right here on Blog Talk Radio, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Pat, we've been missing you, so why don't you just go ahead and take it away.
Okay, yeah. That week that we had off, Whisper seemed like I had a little bit of withdrawal myself, but I was grateful for it. But anyway, of course, as always and forever, thanks to our chat room chicken ears for checking in and clucking along and all their wonderful comments and questions. And blogtalkradio.com provides our radio, chat, and the video services. And Andy Snyder, the Chicken Whisperer, is, of course, the creator of this show and the wind beneath our wings. Andy, we would not be here if it were not for you. I'm Pat Forman, and from all of us, from absolutely all of us, may the flock be with you. Many blessings and best wishes for the holidays. Thank you. Ma 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 ma